Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
As I come near the close of my permanent full-time ministry career, I'll still be around here, Joanna and I will still be coming back, but I've been thinking about some of the things through the past, through all the years I've been here and all the different people I have known. And one of the things I recognize is that a question people ask when they come here and they really get excited is, why isn't this teaching better known? Why aren't there Science of Mind centers on every block in Georgia like they are in California? Outside of California, especially in the East, it's not known all that well. When people, what throws people off a little bit when they first show up in a center like this, a metaphysical spiritual center, which is what we are, one of the things that throws them off is the words that we tend to use. We use words that we never heard growing up, words like consciousness and treatment and demonstration and all these different words, and we use them in ways that aren't familiar to the average person, though they've become more familiar in the last number of years with Wayne Dyer and Oprah and Deepak Chopra and all those different people. I've maintained for a long time that at least part of the reason that this teaching is not growing as quickly as it could be is because we stand around in our centers and we say things like, you have to have the right consciousness for your spiritual mind treatment to create a demonstration. And somebody who comes in for the first time goes, say what? You know, what the hell did he say? You know, I have to confess, I was coming to this. It was actually over at the Woodruff at the time with Dr. Kennedy Schultz, my teacher. I was coming for 2 or 3 years before I had any idea what a practitioner was. I kept hearing that word, but I didn't know what it was. And at the time, I wouldn't know what a demonstration was if it bit me in the foot, you know, kind of thing. But I kept coming. I kept coming in spite of my confusion over a few of the terms, because there was something in there that I could tell was good for me. There was something in there that was transforming me from the inside out. And that's about the time that I started taking classes, as some people do. The class program has been sort of on hiatus for a year or two here because of finding space, but it's going to be expanding. And in classes where I figured out all the secret code words, you know, so I could understand and use this stuff in my day-to-day life. So that's why for a number of years I have tried very hard to use this so-called spiritual language in a way that makes sense even to people who just started coming here, because this is not magic and it's not a secret. People with good sense and with a good sense of spiritual connection have been using these same terms in different languages and different words for thousands and thousands of years. But something else I've noticed, sort of the flip side of this throughout the years, is that there are always a few people who use all the right language and they sound very, very knowledgeable, who really don't understand these principles at all, including, I hate to say, some of our ministers and some of our practitioners. They just use the new and improved words to justify the same old outmoded and unhelpful ideas that a lot of traditional religion has been selling for years, like asking God for special favors through spiritual mind treatment, or supporting the idea of duality, which is still the belief that God is out there doing stuff to us instead of God in here doing things as us. So all I can tell you about before I exit this stage, and Bob is going to do a great job working with these same ideas in a good way, is when you hear anything spiritual anywhere, pay attention. Okay? Listen to who's talking, listen to what they're saying, and feel what these ideas that you're hearing feel like in here. Okay? If these ideas that you hear in here appeal to you, then learn how they work in your life and don't get too caught up in the language, whether it's mine, Bob's, Angela's, or anybody else's. Now, last week I talked about truth. Some of you couldn't get out of bed with the time change and the rain, but I understand that. That's all right, you know. My wife had to push me out of bed. I didn't want to get up last week either. So, but someone once said, the most dangerous liars are those who slide around at the edge of the truth. Very, very interesting and very appropriate in the present climate. You know, that's especially true when we're talking about spiritual truths. So that's why I invite all of you, okay, whether you're new or whether you're a longtime member of this teaching, whether you've taken all the classes or none of them, whether you come here every week or just show up here a few times a year, I invite you to get right in the middle of these ideas. Don't just take them off on the edges. Get right in the middle of these ideas until they become a part of you. A part of you, okay? Ask questions. Read lots of books. Question authority, always a good thing to do. And if something does not ring true with your intuition, or if it places the power of creation outside of you, or if it talks about a war between good and evil or any of those other old ideas, just let it go. You don't have to fight it. You don't have to argue with it or justify why you don't like it. Just sort of walk on by, as the old song says, until you find something in this that works, because there's a lot of it that does. Anyway, with all of that being said, today I want to talk about some things that we need to do in order to use this power of spirit in our life in an intelligent, effective, and enjoyable way. Because it has to be all three. It has to be intelligent because we're dealing with a universal intelligence that is part of what we are. It has to be effective because if it's not, what's the point? And it has to be enjoyable because life is supposed to be enjoyable. Everybody knows that, right? Now, everybody goes, well, why would you ask us that? Of course it is. Well, not everybody thinks that life is supposed to be enjoyable. I had a class a number of years ago, I was talking about these concepts, as someone who was visiting with a friend said, well, you know, the Buddha had four noble truths, and the first of those four noble truths was that life is suffering. And I said, congratulations, you get an A in world religions class. However, the Buddha did not say life has to be suffering. Very, very different. He just said it almost always is suffering for most people because we're so busy being unhappy about what we don't have. That's what the world normally does, that we make it that way. In other words, we cause our own suffering. That's a great idea in this teaching. So let's talk about what state of mind, what mental, emotional, and spiritual state of mind and thinking and being that we can put ourselves in so we can start creating the kind of a life experience that we want to create. And for those of you, just like me, who don't want to use a lot of mumbo-jumbo words, whatever, let's see how simple we can make it. All right? Let's make it easy to remember. And I'm going to give you a little tool here that you can use. Three words, two syllables each, familiar to anyone with a working knowledge of the English language. Are you ready? Here's a tool. Okay. All we need, A-L-L, everything, all we need to become totally in tune with the creative power of spirit and to use this power easily whenever we want and to be completely comfortable and confident while we're using it is to be ready, willing, and able at the spiritual level for whatever shows up in our life at any given moment. It's like, is that all? It's all? Yes. And we'll talk about that, okay? That's it. If we can do just that much, we will be amazed at the transformation in every single part of our life. Every single part of our life. So let's talk about it. First of all, there's an excellent reason why the word ready comes first. It's sort of like, where does ready show up? What's that other phrase? Oh, yeah, ready, aim, fire. Or some people go ready, fire, aim, but that's something else. Anyway, ready, aim, fire, okay? Any firearms expert or instructor will tell you that if you aim and fire before you're ready, okay, before you have yourself calm and centered, before getting your body and your breathing under control, before getting clear about what you're aiming at and why, you're probably going to miss. Your aim will be bad and you'll pull the trigger at the wrong time and you won't hit it. Now, it's the same thing spiritually. Getting ready is the foundation that allows us to be prepared for what comes next, whether it's some action we need to take or if we just need to pay attention. Now, it's not that things aren't going to happen if we aren't ready. Things are always happening. That's the way life goes. I've had all sorts of pleasant and unpleasant things happen in my life that I wasn't ready for. It's just that if we aren't ready spiritually, we won't be able to create the best result. You see, being ready implies a lot of different things, almost all of which are important to our process of creativity. Webster, I always go to Webster, he defines the word ready as being prepared, available, or mentally disposed for action. for action. Straightforward definition, which is actually a pretty good spiritual definition too, because being ready implies that we are open. Just open. Open to what? Open to anything or almost anything, because the more open we are spiritually, the more room there is for something or someone useful or interesting to show up, to show up. One of the great spiritual sayings we've all heard, I'm sure, is when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. How many people have heard that? Okay, all of us, if you've been in this teaching. The trouble is, it's wrong. Okay? In many cases, this is what it should say. When the student is ready, he or she will suddenly notice that the teacher has been there all along waiting for them to get ready. That doesn't go on the t-shirt quite as well, but that's much more accurate, okay? I mean, I've had people in my life, and so have you, I'm sure, who I didn't pay much attention to because I thought they didn't know anything. But one day I was in the middle of a crisis, something going on, and they showed up. Or I remembered something that they said that was exactly what I needed to hear, that I had heard before, but it wasn't coming to me, okay? So being ready doesn't just bring opportunities to us. It allows us to see more clearly all the opportunities that are already there. And they are. They're all around us. Being ready also means being aware that good things sometimes happen in unusual and seemingly unpredictable ways. Now, we have a lot of words for this. We call it coincidence. We call it serendipity. We may call it luck. Some people call it miracles. That's the religious bent. It doesn't matter what we call it. We can even call these opportunities a gift from God, which in one sense is true, but they're not a one-time special gift from God brought on by our prayer for special treatment at that time, okay? They were actually, whatever showed up good, was actually something that was always possible, but we weren't open to it, okay? We, for some reason, didn't think that it was possible, or at least not very likely. That's why nothing happened until we were ready, until we were ready. It wasn't that God wasn't willing to help us. It's that we weren't open to being helped. We weren't open to an answer because we wouldn't allow ourselves to be aware that help was available, that help was available. Now, here's a hint in terms of help, which is some people call it God helping me, whatever. Just bear with me. It's easier to attract help or to be open to being helped when we know that something has to happen through us in a perfectly natural way rather than waiting for it to happen through some temporary suspension of the laws of nature or some one-time request we made of the universe. Love can show up in amazing ways when you don't expect it, if you're open. Money can come in from a variety of different ways. Healing can happen, even if the doctors say it can't, if you're open, no matter what the world tells us is possible or impossible. But we have to be ready for it first. We have to create a space for that stuff to flow in, for that stuff to flow in. All right, that's ready. Next, we have to be willing. And here I want to get a little terminology clear. We have to understand that being willing and using our willpower are two different things. Two different things, okay? In The Science of Mind, Dr. Holmes writes this. He says, too much cannot be said against the belief that willpower is creative. Willpower is the conscious directive power of the intellect and has a very important place in the creative order, but in no case does willpower force things to happen. All right, so you can't force things to happen. The point here is that once we are ready, then we need to consciously decide to move forward in the direction that our intelligence and our intuition are telling us to go. And that's where our willingness can guide us. And no one else has the power to stop us as long as we don't give them our power. So that means our willingness to follow our heart, to follow our dreams, to follow our intuition can never be stopped by someone else's belief that we aren't smart enough, good enough, whatever it happens to be. It means that whenever we are ready to grow, all right, when we're finally ready to listen to the wisdom that is always there inside of us, then nothing that anyone else believes about the obstacles that they see in front of us are going to have any power over us. So our willingness sets the power of spirit in motion. It sets the power of spirit in motion, both through us and as us, and nothing can stop us but ourselves. Now, the most common obstacles here are fear and inertia. Fear, obviously being afraid of something, and inertia, staying where we are. That's why we see so many people around who educate themselves in these ideas and various spiritual principles. They read all the books, they attend all of the seminars and all of the classes, and their life is still a mess. I've seen it more times than I can count in the 30-some years I've been in this teaching. They don't have a pot to pee in. They don't have a relationship that works, not with a significant other or with their family. They have no friends. They don't like their job, and their health is terrible, but boy, are they ready. They're ready, man. They are ready for something better. The problem is they're ready for something new and different to happen, but they aren't willing to change. They aren't willing to change. They're ready for a happier present and a better future, but they aren't willing to let go of the past. That's what controls. Now, the reason they aren't willing to do what needs to be done, which is actually why nothing has happened, is simply because they're afraid. You can understand that. Maybe they're afraid of something they didn't understand. Maybe they're afraid of looking bad. Maybe they're afraid of failure. Maybe they're afraid of success. Some people are. Maybe they're afraid of commitment, whatever it happens to be. So they spend all their time and their energy getting ready, but they never set anything in motion. They never set anything in motion because they aren't willing to do what needs to be done, whatever that happens to be. Now, I've heard a lot of people use the phrase, even in this teaching. Some of you were raised as Bible thumpers here in the South. I understand that. And the statement was supposedly made by the teacher Jesus in the New Testament, "Father, thy will, not mine, be done." Have you heard that? I always thought that was a little passive. You know, myself, even when I first heard it, it sounded to me like we were saying to God, "Hey, big guy, I know you gave me this incredible mind and this incredible heart and this universe of possibility and the ability to make any choice I want, but why don't you just do what you think is best, because I don't trust me. I trust you more than I trust me." That's kind of what we're saying. So instead, try it this way. Let me take a little shift here. Instead of us saying to God, "Thy will, not mine, be done," I think I figured out what the great teachers were actually telling us, including Jesus, which is that God is saying these words all the time to us. Years ago, I remember this very, very clearly. Someone was giving a talk at one of our conferences, and they were talking about us going to God, "What do you want?" And God going, "What do you want?" And we're going, "What do you want? What do you want?" And we keep going back and forth and back and forth. It's a great visual. Okay? In fact, I picture a God, a power, the God of my understanding, that says, "Tell me what you want, believe that it's yours, claim it, and then step back and see what happens." And see what happens, okay? Of course, what we have to remember is, and some people don't realize this, is that this power doesn't care whether we are going to like what we're asking for or not. That's very, very important. It supports the dumb ideas just as easily as it supports the smart ideas, the proverbial two-edged sword. Now, more than once, I wished that wasn't the case, but it is. Because, here's a t-shirt for you, stupid choices create perfectly stupid results. That's kind of the way you could think about it. That's the way the law of mind works. We choose and spirit responds. That's what we do. That's what it does. So it isn't God's will when our life isn't going so well. It's simply the power of God acknowledging and responding to our own misuse of our own will, to our own misuse of our own will. So the answer isn't to turn our will over to God. It's to use our willingness more intelligently, using all the wisdom that life gave us. Finally, let's talk about being able, okay? Because that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where it's important. It doesn't matter how ready we are or how willing we are if we haven't developed the tools that we need to do whatever it is we are ready and willing to do. I found a quote. I liked it. It was by a man named Alan Harrington, and he was in the 50s. He was part of the beatnik generation at the time, you know, with the berets, smoking the cigarettes with the holders and all that stuff back there. And here's what he said. He said, "We are all, it seems, saving ourselves for the senior prom, but many of us forget that somewhere along the way, we must learn how to dance." That's the difference between being at the prom and dancing and enjoying yourself, or being at the prom and sitting on the wall, watching, not being a part, just like life. That's what it means to be able. in all these new thought teachings, and this is one of them if you're not familiar with that term, I think too many of us get caught up in thinking that we can just visualize the end result and have it show up without us having to do any work. Okay, that's what the book The Secret kind of implied, which is one of the reasons I was not a fan, okay? Because if that's what we're thinking, that means we don't understand what we're reading and we don't understand how the universe works. Because mental and spiritual work is not a shortcut around the creative process. It just looks like a shortcut because we're so used to doing things the long way. That's why, okay? We are used to taking the long way around, obsessing about our past, complaining about the present, and worrying about all the possible disasters that could happen to us in the future before we finally get around to doing what we need to do. It's a wonder we ever get anything productive done. And a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't. But once we start seeing the world from a more balanced, intelligent, and spiritual perspective, once we start to believe in a user-friendly universe, I don't remember where I heard that term, but I love it, that works with us as we work with it, things start to flow. They start to flow a lot more easily. We learn how to let go of all the resentment and regrets and all those kind of things from our past. We learn to stop being so unnecessarily afraid of what might happen in the future, and we start doing, that's an able kind of word, doing in the present the things we can do to make our life more fun and interesting and productive, to make things work, okay? In other words, as we start to actually create the life we want, we become more able, not because of some magical words we're using, but because of experience and confidence. That's when you know you're getting this stuff, which prepares us to be a useful part of this whole new life we're now ready to create, okay, by developing both our inner and our outer resources. Now, a good example, they're having the race out there today. So let's talk about running the Peachtree Road Race. How many of you have run the Peachtree Road Race here in Atlanta? Well, we got about 20, 25, okay. Bob will run it when he gets here. I told him that's a tradition. The senior minister runs the Peachtree Road Race. Ha, ha, ha. Now, for those of you who ran it, or other races, if you haven't run this one, how many of you did absolutely no exercise, no training, no running or walking before the event? Anybody? One, Mark. Yeah, that figures. Okay. For most of us, you probably prepared. Maybe not as much as you wish you had, but at least you prepared a little bit. I mean, think about somebody. It could be for this marathon, but let's just talk about the Peachtree. We're familiar with that. We're talking how long? Three and a half months right now until the race, which happens every year. Let's think of someone who had never run that far before in their life, who decides for some crazy reason that they want to run and finish the race. Just wake up one morning and that's what they want. So first of all, they have to get ready. Right? Something has to happen in here before they decide to send in an application for the race on July 4th. Then they have to be willing to put at least a little time and energy into preparing, okay, which is not bad in the spring when it's cool, but it really, really gets bad in June when it starts to get hot. And they have to be ready and willing to stick with their plan. So then on the day of the race, they'll have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and get on MARTA with 80,000 of their closest friends and go up to Lenox and stand in the porta potty line for half an hour, 45 minutes till you get in. And after you get in, you go get in the line again because you know you're going to have to go again by the time you get up to the front, you know, the way it goes. And they stand around for a couple hours until the race starts, which will put them exactly where they were ready and willing to be, which is the starting line. The starting line. Okay, but getting from the starting line to the finish line, okay, which is 6.2 miles up and down Peachtree and ending up in Piedmont Park, would depend upon their actually being able to accomplish what they were ready and willing to do. And if they did it all right, there they'll be at the finish, wearing their T-shirt, fine. If they don't, they'll probably be throwing up around R. Thomas about halfway through, okay, over on the side of the road. All right. Let's move that example over to something like finding a job that you love. I could talk about prosperity. I could talk about relationships. We could talk about health. But let's just pick a job. Most of us have had a job at some point in our life. First of all, where do you begin if you're looking for a new job? And the answer is right where you are, because there's no place else you can begin. That's where you start to get ready, okay? And that's what you got to do first, get ready, okay? Now, there are a lot of people who spend a lot of time getting ready to get ready. Or how do we say it in the South? They're fixing to get ready, okay? That's what a lot of people do, okay? Which means doing things a person who was actually ready to get a good job would do. So that could be things like meditating about what kind of work you love and visualizing yourself, doing work you love to do and getting paid very well. Notice I did not say part of getting ready is complaining to your friends how much you hate your job. That's not getting ready, okay? So now how long do you do this? How long do you shift yourself mentally? As long as it takes. As long as it takes to shift your consciousness into a better place. You do it until you're ready to take the next step, which is to then externally express your willingness to change. To change it from the invisible inside in your mind, start to bring it out into the world. So that might mean putting together a resume and sending it out or talking to recruiters. It might mean telling your current boss you'll be leaving or that you want more responsibility if you want to stay there. It may include telling your friends so that they can hold you accountable, as they say, and help you keep moving forward when you get a little nervous. But finally, you're going to have to do some things that contribute towards being in your new job, maybe even before the job appears. So that may include taking classes, getting some certifications for something you want to do, getting additional training, getting your finances in order so you got a little buffer if you decide to have a little time in between, all that stuff. You may even decide to go ahead and resign from your current job so you can put your full time into getting another job, or as I've heard it phrased, getting a job becomes your job. If you want to do it, okay? The point is, this whole process of creation, once again, it applies to every single part of our life, this whole process of creation on a day-to-day basis, where we're creating our own life experience, works much more smoothly when all three of these steps are integrated. Being ready to grow, being willing to move, and being able to act. Those three things. And through it all, what really makes it work in a seamless way is the knowledge that life or God or spirit or the universe, whatever you want to call it, completely supports what we're doing. It completely supports what we're doing. That's the safety net, if you feel like you need one. That's the part that makes it fun and exciting instead of a drudge and scary and all that other stuff. That's what allows us to wake up every single morning ready, willing, and able to work and to play in a brand new way. Instead of seeing ourselves as helpless beings just trying to cope, just trying to get by, we can begin to see ourselves as creative spiritual beings living in a world of unlimited power and possibility, which is always a lot more interesting. Always a lot more interesting. That's why we're here. That's why we have all these talents that we have, not just our physical talents that we've developed, but our spiritual talents that we were born with. That's why we can do all the amazing things that we do when we do it right. And the sooner we recognize this, the more fun we're going to have and the better our life is going to be. I promise, because this is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. Thank you. All right, let's take a few moments here for ourselves. Recognizing these ideas, all of us hear them differently based on our experience and where we are right now. So take the ideas that resonate with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later. And let's know this. This thing that I am, this life that I am, is an amazing experience. It is amazing in so many different ways. It is amazing in all the possibilities, all the people, all the different opportunities, all the different places and things, all of these things I'm surrounded by. But I realize there is an intelligence that permeates all of it. That intelligence is the intelligence of life. It is the intelligence that allows things to work together smoothly and seamlessly to create more life and better life. And that's not just something I have. That's who I am. That's what I am. I am a perfect idea in the mind of a loving, creative spirit. So as I recognize this, I look at the things that occupy my mind, the worries, the concerns, the fears, the dreams, all of these things, and I put them in perspective. Instead of being overwhelmed by what is going on in my life, I step back and simply see it as part of a creative process where I am in control. And though I may not actually control how it happens, I control how I relate to it. I control how I relate to spirit, how I relate to the laws of creation, and how I relate to the whole realm of possibilities that are open to me. So as I look at my job, I know that this job is simply something I have created, and if I want to change it in any way, I can. If I look at my body, my physical body, my health, I recognize that my body is an outpicturing of my mind and my spirit, and I can change that in any way I desire. If I look at my relationships with my significant other, with my family, and these are not as healthy as I would like, I can shift my consciousness so that I know what I need to do to make them heal. I can do this with my prosperity. I can do this with every single part of my life. That's the choice, the power I've been given. So as I recognize this, I am ready to be present in life, as life, going through life. I am ready to be willing to be open and to do what I need to do. And I am ready to be able, by taking the gifts that I have been given and using them to their best advantage in the best possible way. This is how I live my life. I know this, and I give thanks. I give thanks for understanding this teaching. I give thanks for understanding the true nature of life. I give thanks for understanding who and what I am. I place myself directly in the center of the creative process, and I give thanks for all that I have been given and all that I have yet to give. And I release this awareness into consciousness, letting it go, knowing that it is doing everything it needs to do because I have set it in motion. Please join me in saying, and so it is.